Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome and thank you for joining us today. This is an hour dedicated to the notion of enlightenment, an hour for inquiry and reflection, all in an effort to understand exactly what enlightenment means and what it is to be enlightened. An hour devoted to exploring the edge of consciousness and all that is implied thereof, an hour that recognizes the nature of the subjective experience as being at least as important as the objective reality within which we reside. Indeed, an hour for the open-minded, willing to examine their deepest beliefs, an hour designed to help us go further inward and perhaps challenge some of those old ideas about the world we live in and the people we have become. This is an hour where we strive to evaluate knowledge as inseparable from the total experience of reality. Now for my friend and producer, Kyle. Just for Kyle. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner, Ravinder, awaits you there now. You can log on by going to eldontaylor.com/chat. All right, Rav, it's time for you to invite everyone to the chat room and add your words of wisdom for the day.
You're funny. I like that. I like that a lot. Hello, everyone. Yes, of course, do come join us in the chat room. And then when you come in the chat room, you know, also ask for an invite to the after chat group. If you're not part of the after chat group, you are missing out right now. We've had some incredible conversation this last week. So come join us. It's eldontaylor.com/chat.
All right. Now we're going to add a new segment beginning this week based on the input of your letters. So, Ravinder, the segment, question of the week. You're being asked to either share an interesting question that you dealt with this past week or tell us what program you're working with and why. So take it away, my dear.
I think today's one is going to interest you. You know, the program that I'm working with right now is Healing from Invalidation. I think of that as a really high power esteem program. And, you know, when you were first talking about creating it, it's like, why do you need another program like this? But I have found it invaluable for more than just the esteem reasons. You know, I use it when I'm under stress. And right now, we have a little bit of stress with our air conditioning having died during the heat wave. And now we have no water as well. Fingers crossed that everything is being fixed right now. But Healing from Invalidation is a program that I use when life is just getting to be a little bit much. It keeps me on the straight and narrow.
Well, I happen to like that program, so good. Thank you. Every week I read some of your letters as our way of paying respect to the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week our show featured Dr. Michael Shermer, and we discussed skepticism in his book, The Believing Mind. Richard commented in our after chat, quote, "I suspect you won't be surprised that I found this show with Mr. Shermer thoroughly enjoyable. We have cognitive machinery and metaphorically software. We can only benefit by understanding our options for using those faculties. Thinking about thinking is a high human art form with great possibility." Michelle added, "Dr. Shermer represents a person who can be a skeptic without being mean-spirited. I've met many like that, so it was wise to hear someone who has a sense of humor about it," excuse me, "and is not a know-it-all, even admitting that there is room to believe that which we do not know. I look forward to him being on again or as a regular commentator." Sandy wrote, "I am just now getting the chance to thank you for having Michael Shermer on. I grew up in a very conservative fundamentalist Christian background and even married a minister. After having gotten divorced from that abusive man, not all are abusive, but mine was, I turned to a different point of view. I really appreciated your having Michael Shermer on. It really reinforced what I've lived through, and I don't feel guilty one little bit. Thanks so very much. I enjoyed it thoroughly." Diane wrote, "Good discussion. I think it proves the point that it is the good in all of us that matters, even to the skeptics." You know, Diane, I found his closing remarks to be quite humble and candid when he stated that he would not be living differently had he remained a Christian evangelist. I'll paraphrase some, but his words revealed that in his opinion, the purpose of life is about service, first to family and then outward to all. To Shermer, Excuse me again. Life is about being a good person, and who can dispute that? Ravinder, you have comments on that?
It's great. I thought the interview was fabulous. I was actually incredibly proud of you last week because you have two opposite sides, and oftentimes these interviews can get kind of heated. And no, I thought you brought it together really well. And, you know, we did come to the meat of everything in the discovery that our views are very, very similar. It's just that slight word difference that is different.
And there's never a reason in my view. Well, we'll do that later. Tom wrote, Shermer has carved out a nice little niche for himself as a professional skeptic, but I wonder if most people thought like him, would we have the modern technologies we enjoy today? Deepak Chopra has pointed out technical advances come from dreamers, not skeptics. Well, not quite so, Tom. Chopra is simply framing his statement in a less than fully disclosing, honest way. There are quite a number of innovators, scientists of renown, and so forth, that have held skeptical views toward the same sort of things Shermer does. I mean, let's be real. What specifically did he say in our interview other than his glib remark about Anthony Flew, which he acknowledged was said in jest, that you really can disagree with? There's a lot of bunk out there, and in Shermer's mind, well, he's just a member of the Bunko Squad. Matt wrote, hello, Eldon. I appreciate and enjoy your show very much. Thank you. I also respect your decision to interview Michael Shermer. There is so much mystical information being discussed on Hay House. It is good to hear some skeptical balance. Along those lines, I'd be interested to hear you interview Sam Harris, who, unlike self-described agnostic Shermer, is more of an atheist. I recently watched the debates with Shermer Harris and Deepak Chopra. I was surprised to see Chopra get visibly upset and become combative. I wonder how the discourse would go on provocative enlightenment. Well, Matt, in my opinion, there's never a reason to become emotionally upset just because someone disagrees with you. And that said, I do see a lot of folks visibly upset over nothing more than a different opinion. You know, I mean, that says a lot about the world we live in today, at least to me. Civil differences are exactly what must constitute a democracy. It's that simple. I mean, it doesn't matter how many people you get together, they're not going to agree on everything. So when we lose our ability to be civil, well, you can take it from there. Now, as for Sam Harris, I'll look into him. But remember this. The reason we brought Shermer to the show was his contribution in understanding how and why the brain chooses to believe some of the crazy things some people believe. Mark wrote, the point I would like to make is that Dr. Shermer, the so-called skeptic, in fact, seems to be less of a skeptic and more of a realist, at least at the philosophical level. Personally, I consider myself a direct realist, so this matter is important to me. Nancy wrote, unfortunately, with all his knowledge, he does not know God, the highest form of knowing. Okay, moving on. Debbie wrote, I love Zeldin. He is so forthright and his stuff, well, it just works. Well, I have to just love you back, Debbie. M wrote, if your thoughts and feelings play the same tune, then that is the song you will sing. Check out Mind Programming by my friend Eldon Taylor. Take a look inside the biological computer and understand we are but consciousness experiencing a mind program. Change the program, the reality changes, you change. Well, amen to that, Mark. Remember, however, we're playing in an environment. You know, kind of, Ravinder and I had this conversation. It's kind of like, you know, there is a sea out there, and we were on the lake this last weekend, and there was some turbulence, and you know, when we live our lives, we're living in the sea. We can choose how we're going to sail our boats. I mean, we are the captains of our soul. And we can take harbor in some alcove that seems quiet and we can just meditate. But someone can come along in a speedboat and suddenly you've got the ripples and the waves and things. We do live in an environment that we participate in and we navigate within that environment. And I think it's important for us to always remember that. You have feedback on that, Rev?
No, I think that's a great one. You know, the fact is things do happen in the world. What we have control over is what we choose to do about them.
But to be ignorant or to turn your back on the suffering that's going on somewhere.
I don't choose that one.
Nah. Okay. So, you know, we're on the same page. Nicola wrote, I'm reading Mind Programming. It's very disturbing how your thinking can be manipulated without knowing. Thank you for bringing this to our attention so we can consciously make decisions. Sean wrote, been using your forgiveness set. I forgive myself, I forgive all others, and I am forgiven. And it gives me presence and peace. Well, me too, Sean. Rebecca wrote, I have bought many InterTalk CDs and I love them. Jean wrote, I have several of your CDs and I love them. Well, you know, Rep, I never get tired of hearing people tell us how much they love InterTalk. Do you?
Nope, never.
David wrote, hi, Dr. Taylor. Our family is really enjoying the InterTalk CDs that we purchased. The kids love the stories that you tell on the Child Guidance CD, and I am currently using the Ecotech Stop Self-Sabotage CD at night. Sharon wrote, I have a good friend, Margo. She went through cancer 8 years ago, stage 3 bowel and liver. She says your CDs helped her, and she feels that they contributed to her being cancer-free today. Frank wrote, dear Dr. Taylor, I just want to thank you for the free MP3 program releasing fear, doubt, and feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. A few days ago, I started playing the program. Within 24 hours, I sensed a more positive outlook on my future and present life. On July 5th, I was laid off from my job of 5 years because of the economy. Instead of having a nervous breakdown with a sprinkling of suicide thoughts, within minutes of hearing of my fate, I began the process of picking myself up and planning to create the life I've always wanted. In fact, 2 days before, I ordered your Fit and Healthy and Resolution Solution sets. By the way, before I downloaded Releasing Fear, Doubt, and Feelings of Hopelessness and Helplessness, I had been faithfully listening to an affirmation CD for 3 months that did not work because of all the negative programming in my mind. Each time I would repeat the affirmations, negative thoughts would override the positive affirmations that I had just repeated. I look forward to doing the work in order to become the person that I want to be. Thank you again. Well, thank you, Frank, for your feedback, and we're thrilled at your success and confident that you will know many more and realize the person that you want to be in the process. Now, Rev, you and I have discussed the difference between inner talk, priming your self-talk from the inside out, versus affirmations attempting to overcome negative thoughts from the outside in. Would you like to add anything there?
Oh, most certainly. I mean, affirmations can be really good. I mean, that is the fundamental behind it all. But the fact is, we all have those beliefs, you know, deep inside us that come from our childhood, come from all that negative programming. So you can tell yourself, I'm wonderful. But if your inner belief doesn't agree with you, then it's simply not going to work. And that's the advantage of the Inner Talk program, is that it bypasses all of those defense mechanisms, brings it from the inside out. It just changes it automatically. And it can feel like magic. I've had programs and that I felt a difference with in a couple of hours. When you get just the perfect program, it's cool.
Okay, that's all the time we're going to take for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming, and once again, I both appreciate and thank you for your feedback and continued support. Now to today's show, Life Without Limits with my shaman friend, Peter Calhoun. Peter is the real deal, and he joins us today to discuss and teach the command over the primal forces of fire and water, earth and air, together with the ability to call, mingle with, or communicate with numerous species of wild animals and birds, which Peter says are all manifestations of an awakening. Peter has been with us before, but for those of you who might have missed him, let me tell you a little bit about him. Peter is said to be one of the very few persons who has experienced a full awakening of the Siddhis, a Vedic term for the paranormal spiritual powers inherent in all people. He has demonstrated these powers before numerous groups, and many are described in his book, Life Without Limits. Reading about Peter from his website, we find the following. Quote, nearly 4 decades ago, while serving as a priest in the Episcopal Church, Peter had a series of lucid visions that completely turned his world upside down. In these visions, he was shown that the vast majority of people on earth were trapped in a prison of false belief systems that made up the consensus reality of our times. These false beliefs, which had no connection to truth or reality, had left all but a few of the most advanced individuals powerless and leading lives that were limited and inconsequential. Peter was told that in truth, each of us, as individual manifestations of an infinite creator, are beings without limitations of any kind. In a second vision, Peter was shown that his sole purpose in his present life was to remember all that he had been previously, to understand what was learned in each lifetime, and then awaken the cities or soul powers that he had developed in other time periods. He was to teach and demonstrate these as abilities that lie latent in all of us. Well, that's exactly what Peter's latest book is all about, so let's get him in here. Welcome back to Provocative Enlightenment, Mr. Peter Calhoun.
Thank you, Eldon. It's good to be back with you again.
Indeed.
I enjoyed hearing what some of your other programs have been about also.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, last week, as I say, we had the number one skeptic on the world, Michael Shermer, and it was a very, you know, warm conversation, and, you know, we basically didn't have any major disagreements except in our conclusion, the supernatural or the higher power. And to that, I'm going to give the man credit. He admitted that, hey, you know, that first principle, that there are some things that are just unknowable, unprovable, and, you know, the difference between not believing that or believing that is a moot point. What do you think of that?
I think that there's a huge difference between honest skepticism and a closed mind. And what the world doesn't need is more closed minds, but a person that is an honest skeptic and has an inquiring mind, then they're searching for the truth just like the rest of us. And I've never read any of his works, but I like what I hear.
Yeah, I welcomed his viewpoints. I sincerely did. Let's begin this way, my friend. Tell us what it's like to inform the world that you can call the animals, bend the wind, bring the storms, and so forth. I mean, you must meet with a certain amount of skepticism yourself, even maybe cynicism, when you proclaim yourself to be fully awakened and able to pull off these shamanic feats. So how do you feel? Well, I mean, what goes on in your mind?
Well, when these things began to happen 30 years ago, it was a very humbling experience. And yet I felt that all along, you know, there's nothing special about me. Perhaps I've just remembered more of who we are. But I was so aware that these abilities that I was beginning to demonstrate, beginning to experience, are there in all of us. And it is just because of the programming we've had, the negative programming, the limiting beliefs since we were toddlers, since our mentors, meaning our family members and priest and rabbi and teachers, began speaking to us about what the world was like and who we were, and we accepted this. We bought into this. We didn't really have any choice. And it wasn't their fault, because they'd been given the same negative programming since they were toddlers. And I realized that, you know, someone has to bring, or a lot of us have to break this cycle that has limited our species. We are so much more than what we've been told by our so-called mentors.
You know, Peter, we live in a very interesting time. You probably heard my remark about the sea or the lake, the body of water that we all reside in, and, you know, captain of our ship, you know.
Yes.
And that analogy, there are a lot of disturbing things in the world. Do you think the world is ready for the knowledge that you're bringing forward today?
I think the world is ready. There are many individuals that are perhaps not yet ready. There are times I've felt, well, maybe I'm a little bit ahead of my time, but hardly a week goes by that I don't find people that are really ready for this kind of information. They feel like they have tried the various philosophies, and they haven't worked for them. Some people have been on a certain path for 30 years, several decades, and they feel that they haven't gotten any further than they were when they started out. And so for these people, I feel that demonstrations of these abilities that are latent in all of us can actually break that crystallization and open people up. I think that these demonstrations, and when we do these demonstrations of the so-called cities or our paranormal powers, we cheat time. And I mean by that that a person may not have to go through all the long periods of exploring different pathways. They see this demonstrated, and they know that there's something. We are something much more than what we've been told. And that's what I like to do, is help people to cheat time
and make a big leap. I love that metaphor, and I think you're absolutely right. But as my friend, I must admit, I've been struggling myself with maintaining a spiritual focus while doing my best to be a responsible citizen in this country at this time. There seems to be, you know, scandals proliferating everywhere, and they range from taxpayer dollars paying for extravagant parties and prostitutes to spying on our citizens and our allies at an unprecedented level. So my fully awakened friend, tell me, should we pay any heed to the stuff going on in the world, the suffering, the political, and so forth? Or in the alternative, how do we balance these matters spiritually and worldly? I mean, is there a time when, as Jesus did, we need to just clear the temple? Or are we better off closing our windows and doors, even our minds, and envisioning a world without all the hardship and nonsense that currently exists?
I think, Eldon, is not an either or. I think there are times in which we're called to act decisively in the outer world, and to try, when we have the opportunity, to try to bring about change and to stop, do what we can about the corruption. But I believe we also have to choose our own battlefields. Many times people burn themselves out fighting emotionally and mentally and even physically fighting what's out there. And they become very cynical because it seems so hopeless. So there are times in which we will see that little window of opportunity, and we can act and make a difference. That's what I tell people. Look for that window of opportunity, but don't waste your energies fighting everything that comes along, because it'll burn you out. As a matter of fact, our consciousness is lowered when we get caught in these battles. We're brought down to the level of what we're trying to fight against.
You know, I find it a very interesting paradox I'd like to comment on, but the paradox goes this way. You know, evil persists in the world so long as good men do nothing about it.
I would agree with that. I would agree that there's a Hindu maxim, you know, we say we become what we love, but there's a Hindu maxim that we become what we hate. And I would take that even a step further. We become what we continually do battle against. I think that we've come to a point in which doing battle against the dark forces is not the strategy that we need. In fact, to directly oppose the negative forces can empower them. When we try to do away with the evils of alcoholism through prohibition in the 30s, what happened is that we didn't do away with the evils of alcoholism. We brought organized crime into the country and empowered it. So there is a way, I think, a strategy that we could use. It's very much like the martial arts, is that we don't directly oppose negativity, but we can take that energy and turn it around. And where it doesn't do the damage that it was intended to do.
I'm going to ask you to flesh that out a little more on the other side of the break, because I think it's a very important point, finding this place of balance where we're, you know, we are responsible, but we are not feeding. We have a hard break coming up. We're speaking with Peter Calhoun about his work and book, Life Without Limits. If you're not already in our chat room, now is a great time to join in the conversation. We have a short movie featuring today's guest for you during the break. So be sure to log into eldentaylor.com/chat. Do stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after a few words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Peter Calhoun about his work and book, Life Without Limits. But before we get back to the show, a couple of points of business. I will be presenting a five-hour workshop in Pasadena during this year's I Can Do It conference in November. The workshop is titled Mind Mastery for Life Mastery, and you can count on an experience that will absolutely empower your life. There is a special early bird registration being offered by Hay House right now. So check it out. Go to eldontaylor.com, click on the banner there. It'll take you out and give you all the details. I'd love to meet every one of you. Try and be there. I also want to invite you to join me on Facebook as a friend or a fan. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies, and from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. And let me remind you also to be sure and register to receive my free newsletter when you visit my site and get your free MP3. Okay, before the break, we were talking about balance. Peter, you say we are beings without limitations of any kind. Flesh that out. I mean, certainly you don't mean that literally, or do you?
I mean this in that not that we are all powerful. We couldn't create a movement on our nearest planet, the moon. It is. I'm speaking of this in terms of the limitations that we have been that we've accepted as being absolute and binding. And that my discovery is that what we've been told about ourselves, what we've been told about our world, is incorrect, and it is so limiting. And when we begin to realize that the world we live in is not a linear phenomenon in an inanimate creation, but it's a living being. It's a magical world, and that we are magical beings. And so I use this that we are without limits. That is a statement to get attention, and that the limitations that we have that we have accepted since we were toddlers, those limitations don't exist. And that is what I've been trying to do with the demonstrations. There are many people that have made claims, but how do you prove it or disprove it? And so the stories I told in my book, Life Without Limits, which, by the way, can be purchased through Amazon, I spoke of the demonstrations I did with others present. There were two to 25 and sometimes 150 people were present in some of the demonstrations I did in lectures. And that has been my intent, is to demonstrate the things that I talk about and to say there's nothing special about me, and yet people want to make us special. They want to say, well, this person can do this, these things, I can't possibly do it. When these things first began to happen, I was totally surprised, and I said, did I really do this? And finally, I realized that I did, and that, for example, an idea of how we accept limitations is some years ago, a person who had studied with me was in an automobile accident. His larynx was damaged, and I tell this story in Life Without Limits, and he was not able to do his music anymore. He was a guitarist and a singer. And I visited him in his home, and he was, of course, in a state of great depression for weeks after the accident. He could only speak in a whisper. And at a certain moment, I felt this knowing within me. It was not thought in the usual sense. It was a deep knowing that I could be an instrument for his healing at that moment. I felt like there was a window of opportunity, a portal, and I seized the moment. And I said, I made an incredible statement. I said, I'm going to give you back your voice. I never would have said anything like that if I'd come out of my conscious self. I went over and touched him, and his voice came back permanently, and the so-called permanent damage turned out to be not an accurate diagnosis. He was completely healed on the spot. Really? It's the same thing I did when I demonstrated the combustion of ceremonial fires by just stating my intention that the fire would combust, and this happened 4 or 5 times.
So Peter, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Is this awakening of spiritual powers that you're talking about, the things that you're doing, you know, and they're, forgive me, but they're reminiscent of Jesus of Nazareth and whatever, you know, why would you use my words and not do my deeds? All that I have done, you will do and more. I mean, are you saying that awakening the cities is akin to that?
Absolutely. In fact, Jesus first said this. He said, these things will you be able to do and more. And he was speaking not just to his followers then, but he was speaking down through the centuries. He foresaw that there would be a time that would come in which there would be a global awakening, and many people would begin to demonstrate. And I feel that I'm perhaps part of the vanguard of this, but I feel within the next century there are going to be many people that will be awakening these same abilities. And this is why I felt such a mandate to write about my experiences of awakening and the demonstrations that I did. I felt that I had to demonstrate these, not just write about them, not just say, this happened to me. Because, as I said, anybody can say anything that happened to them, but there's no proof, and a lot of people have. And so I've tried to demonstrate this to as many people as I could, whether it's called showing an ability to call up the winds, to call in a storm, to end drought, to combust the fire. These are all, this is very ancient, and it's a part of all spiritual traditions, the command over the elements. It's in cross-cultural shamanism, and it is believed in cross-cultural shamanism, for example, and the Vedas, that to develop command over just a single element, like the command over the power of powers of water or of the air, the winds, is quite an accomplishment. But they said that to develop a command over all of the elements is an extraordinary thing, and that is the gold of people that are on this path of the command of the elements. This is seen both in Vedic tradition and in shamanism, in your shamanic traditions, as an impeccable path to enlightenment. And so it is it's something that is very ancient, and it is recognized all over the world. And I just happen to be one of those that somehow found myself on this path of the command of the elements.
So okay, I love your book. You know that, and I suggest that everybody get a copy of your book. And I know you personally. I know that many of these things, and I have no reason to doubt all of these things you literally have done. So I will vouchsafe that as well. So with that, you know, said, give us an example of what you mean by false beliefs that we've all become a part of.
I will, but I want to say that on my website, info@petercalhoun.com, if you want to know more about classes and seminars that we offer, then that would be the place to find out about the events. But the type of limiting belief that I would speak of is one that's so common is that of lack. We from the time we were young, we were indoctrinated with the idea of lack, unless you had some extraordinary teachers. But most people feel that there is this lack in the life. There's not enough love, not enough money, not enough time, not enough material things. We never feel that there's enough, and we see this as the way the world is. But we are as divine, immortal, and spiritual beings without limitations. We are the embodiment of abundance. Most people haven't brought that abundance into their physical life, but we have the ability to bring anything from the unmanifest into the manifest, as I've been trying to demonstrate. And we don't have to feel limited in any way. So the idea of lack is a good example. Another false belief is that it's found there right in the opening verses of the scriptures where God tells Adam to subdue the earth and have dominion, or to dominate the beasts of the fields, the fowls of the air, and the fishes of the sea. What kind of deity is it that tells us to dominate and subdue the rest of life around us? And yet this has been used by greedy people as a justification for what they've done. And now we're in an 11th hour situation because of that so-called false belief that we are somehow above the law, above the laws of creation. And now we're in an 11th hour situation in which we may not make it through the 21st century unless there's a huge turnaround.
Peter, I get the idea of scarcity. I get the idea of, you know, we use the world as though it's a thing, not a living something. I understand, you know, that, but I guess where I get to also is I come right back to the conversation that we had in the very beginning, and I hear in your voice this this real concern for, you know, the planet, and then I hear, well, we might not make it into this next century. So it seems to me that if you can manifest something from nothing, I mean, I can remember Lee Poulos, a friend of mine, was involved in a film, The Psychic Connection. And in this film, there was a particular individual that could pull emeralds, diamonds out of his eyes, manifested, you know, from nothing. And that appeared to me to be very questionable. But if you can do all of this, if you really can, then what is the concern? I mean, is it you're unable to create something that is being destroyed by mankind?
Oh, I think that we can. And I think that we could turn around things in just a matter of a very short time if we knew the powers that were within us. When I say that we may not make it into the next century, that's not an absolute statement. That is, I'm saying basically that every time, and being a scientist, you know this, that the times that our species has made a great leap forward has been the times in which it was threatened. You know, the ice ages and the meteors hitting the planet, and that is the time it seems that we were forced to draw on resources we didn't know we had. And I think that the state of the planet now and where the world is going is forcing more and more people to draw on spiritual resources that they may not have known they had. We're going to see such an awakening in the coming, even more than what's happened in the coming decades, that I think that the world that we'll see at the end of the 21st century will hardly be recognizable. I don't know that we could even conceive of that. But I tend to take the positive approach. I think that it is this 11th hour situation that is going to force us to make this huge leap forward spiritually as well as technologically.
I have to pursue that a little, you know. You know all about the book, The Secret. You know all about the law of attraction. And essentially, they can be interpreted to indicate that, you know, I can just sit on my sofa and visualize what I want, and I can create it, you know, ex nihilos. which is somewhat what I hear. You know, you can cause these things to happen just out of your mind. Have I got that right, or am I missing something?
I think that you've got it right. I believe that maybe what is missing in some of these is these approaches is that we have a lot of unconscious programming from the time we were from childhood and perhaps going even back into past lives, our species that we when we say I can do this, I can manifest this, there's that subtle voice. The adversary that says, no, you can't do it. And that is part of the conditioning we may have had, that we don't, we're not able to do these things. And we have a lot of limiting beliefs that offset that positive belief that we can make these things happen.
I've spent a lifetime looking at that. I can't disagree with you at all. That's, you know, my work for 30 plus years has all been in that area.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure I understand you. I have railed against the interpretations of the secret and the law of attraction that you need do nothing. You can just visualize it. You can create your vision board, if you will.
Good you for can you.
Take up your supine position on the sofa and the world is just going to drop it into you, just going to give it to you. I have absolutely railed against that. Am I understanding you to say that I'm wrong?
No,
that
I'm indeed. You're right.
Pardon?
You're right. It's not that simple, and I think it's irresponsible to create this great hope in people, and where they that this simplistic approach is going to work for everybody all the time. It'll work for some people some of the time.
All right, well, let's get back to your book. In Life Without Limits, you claim that the real ascension of the human species will be through its return to the earth. Okay, now that's a little confusing based on, say, the teachings of some of the ascended masters. So what is it that you base this statement on?
We have seen ourselves as separate from life around us. And the reality of this, as I understand it, is that we are not separate. We have been going through a period of great separation from the earth, from life, all life on earth, from God, from ourselves and our fellow human being. And we are moving from a time of separation that has caused enormous problems to a unity consciousness and a oneness that we once had. There was a time in remote antiquity in which we were capable of prodigious feats. It would have been almost, I've had visions of this, we would have been able to barely conceive of the type of being we were. We lost this ability when we went into this consciousness of separation. We had this desire to see, to understand perception. How do we perceive things? How do we know? At that time, we came out of a deep knowing without needing to know how we knew. So when we did this, we set up the separation, and that's when the nightmare began. With separation, we experienced fear, because fear is separation, just like God is the same thing as love and oneness. And so what is happening is we've done that trip. We've played out that, and it has not worked for us. And so we are making a shift, and we at least some of our greatest teachers see that this has got to happen back into that unity consciousness and the oneness that we once knew. That's what I mean by return to the earth, return into a oneness with the earth. I don't mean that we go and live like primitive people have lived. We don't, that would not help us. But it's a return to the state of oneness and unity. And this, it is a state of oneness and unity that has enabled Astrid and I to be in communication with any species of wild animal, to even call them to us out of the forest, dozens of different animals. We've tried this experimentally, and I've seen deer come out of the forest and drop to their knees at Astrid's feet when we were camping or when we were hiking. We saw a doe standing in the pathway. We were hiking in the high country in the Northern Rockies, and the doe, instead of running off, dropped to its knees. This is extraordinary when you think about it. But we're all, when we go into this state of oneness, then we can walk into the forest without the forest growing silent. Because we're no longer exiles from the Garden of Eden, to use a traditional approach, because we are so at one with life around us that we're not perceived as a threat. We're not perceived as something that's alien to the rest of creation. Anyway, that's a long answer, but...
No, that's a good answer. I mean, I've experienced that myself. I mean, when you don't see yourself as separate from the earth, when you do see it as alive, when you know, I think of it as mind melting, if you will, with the flora and the fauna, everything changes. I mean, the rattlesnakes don't bite you. The Indians used to say rattlesnakes bite white men, because white men see themselves as different from nature, you know, so I'm not at all surprised about that. We don't have a lot of time, but I want to ask this question. What must we learn to move from the mental realm to what you call the realm of the high heart in maybe 1 minute?
With the mistake that we made, if you call it a mistake, maybe it was a part of our experiment with who we are, but we shifted, we became polarized in an identification with the mind. It's not that the mind is bad, but we identified with it and separated ourselves from our feeling intuitive nature. And it is from that feeling intuitive nature that we experience that deep knowing. We may not know why we know, but we know. And so this is what we will return to. What we need to return to is that feeling intuitive nature that's connected with the high heart. The high heart is the portal through which our higher feelings of ecstasy, of joy, of compassion, of inner harmony and balance, or inspiration, that's the portal for these higher feelings. And then the mind, the conscious mind becomes a tool of consciousness. We have said that the mind is I know we have just 1 minute, sorry. The mind is not consciousness, but it is meant to be a tool of consciousness. Consciousness is a much broader, deeper thing. And for lack of a better word, we relegate that to the feeling intuitive nature that we don't fully understand.
It's a wonderful book. I love your book, Life Without Limits. Quickly, where can our audience get the book and learn more about you?
You can order it through Amazon, and you can learn more about the things that I'm talking about. Joining us in one of our events that in the book and on our website, info@petercalhoun.com. I'm sorry, that's my email. But my email, info@petercalhoun.com. The website is petercalhoun.com.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank our behind-the-scenes team, Kyle and Joe, as well as the rest of the gang at Hay House Radio for making what we do on this show so pleasurable. And, of course, a big thank you to our guest and to all of you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show and will join us again next week, same time and same place. And if you have comments on our show, do let us know. Okay, until next time, believing in yourself always matters.